way. But I think what you're saying is that you see a black op on a major scale behind this event. Is that correct?
Yeah. The for me now, as I started as a believer in the lone gunman story, and then doing the evidence, I'm now my point is clear. It was a major black op operation, very very ugly, and so on, and which means that some people with the payroll from Norwegian government have been contributing somehow, maybe for the cover part after. And this thing was so advanced and so great that, of course, there has been elements from abroad participating one way or another. Speaking about this guy who has photographed a video film from the helicopter shooting, he actually has. I have a photo of him, and he has a thin body, while the condemned the person Breivik, he is somewhat strong or something, and there are also differences in the hair structure. And I'm now looking at the photo, three different photos, who were all taken during the shooting or shortly after the shooting, and two of the photos who were taken after the shooting are displaying persons in swimsuits, how you say, dykkerdrakt.
Wetsuits.
And it seems that they are different colors on the wetsuits, and they were wear by different persons. So there we have smoking gun evidence for three different gunmen. And one of these swimsuit people, the photo of that guy who take it from these Delta people who had stopped or at last came to the island and arrested one of these people. What happened was that photo was released via some lawyer into the press. And after that, this lawyer lost his lawyer license. So that is quite peculiar, and it also indicates how strong these black ops forces are in Norway, like working, pulling strings within the lawyer community, within the police community, and so on.
Listen, Hans, would you mind telling us a little bit about the Delta unit and their efficiency when it came to stopping this shooter?
So now we are in the Utøya Island scenario, and the shooting started shortly before 5:30 in the afternoon. I have a video footage showing one of their cars coming to the nearest camping, which was where there were many boats that could be used, and it appeared there at 5:50, which is only 20 minutes after the shooting started, which is very, very, very swift, very efficient way of getting to the crime scene, completely armed with people in the car. But what then appears in this video evidence is that one can see that the car turns around after coming to the closest crossing point, where there are boats with motors available, and it's only a minute to cross over to the island, take action, and fire on the murderers there. And then the car turns around and then goes away from the crime scene, and then maybe 15 minutes later or so, there is another video footage showing a small rubber boat with a motor who is then being loaded and overloaded with like 100 kilo policemen, heavily armed, and it starts taking receiving getting in water into it from the start, and the first thing they do is to head towards the wrong island, where they're not towards the island where the terrorist action is taking place. And while these completely tragic comic, mostly tragic, of course, police actions from the very professional police team is taking place, it's like for each minute lost or wasted on this nonsense, one youth is losing their life. So this was the only day, like in Norwegian history, that there was a need for their services. They were heavily trained, professional, and so on and so on, and they just blew it completely in a way that is incomprehensible to most. People think they are stupid, but they are not. They are skilled, they are tough, they are professional. But somehow this day, their command structure, what they received and were told to do from the superiors, was completely awkward and misfit for the situation, to say the least.
I just want to point out that instead of taking the closest distance, putting the rubber boat in the closest distance to the island, which is about 600 meters, they went 8.6 kilometers further north. And just like Hans said, they started towards the wrong island, even though you could hear the shooting. And there were 10 people. It looked like Monty Python. You can find this video on YouTube and so on. The whole rubber boat is, there's 10 people standing up in it, in all the equipment. So the rubber boat starts taking in water, and then that drowns the engine. So they're just floating around there in the end. Anyway, they swap into a motorboat that comes and rescues them. And then that boat, I don't think they even go full speed towards the island in that boat either. But they approach the island. And while all of this is going on, Anders Breivik, the accused assassin, is on his mobile speaking to the police central, saying, "Commander Breivik, more or less mission accomplished, I'm ready to surrender to Team Delta." While this is going on. And it's just totally absurd. But then when the team finally came to the island, tell us what happened then. Was there a big shootout or whatever, you know, the natural thing that would have been that they had, that there had been some kind of a showdown and then they arrested him violently, or what happened?
It's like, we cannot know for sure what actually happened when these police Delta Force SWAT team actually hit the island with their people and their armor. So for me, this is some sort of fog. So what was said is that he was called by name, asked to surrender, as if they already knew that he was there shooting. How could they know so quickly? How could they know there were not more shooters? It's actually been far too little focused what happened on the island after the police finally got there and the shooting finally stopped. And because then you have the evidence issue. This was a completely completely brutal crime scene. Youths were lying around, some floating dead in the water, some wounded heavily, others were scared into shock and so on. So and the issue was how those who had shot them, because there were more than one, what actually happened to them. So it seems that what is, because Norway, we have lots of coast activity going on. We have fishing boats, we have oil rigs and so on. So we have quite experience on these rescue mission things. So, which is normally functioning quite professionally and helping the victims and so on. So what should have happened after this shooting ended was that first they should have sent ambulance personnel crossing to the island with boats to help those who had survived, but were lying there wounded and needing help. And of course, they should have sent ambulance helicopters into the island. But none of this happens. We heard about parents who have been told in the court or something like that that their daughter died nearly 2 hours after the shooting finished because she was lying in the island heavily wounded, and the only person who came and tossed her around was some Delta police guy who had they were not ambulance personnel, so the ambulance personnel were kept away from the islands, and one has to ask how could this be possible?
It's absolutely incredible. Also, as far as I know from your research, the ammunition that was used in this whole incident, could you describe that? I mean, that was not a normal type of ammunition.
No, it's like before we heard about dum-dum bullets. What's a dum-dum bullet? It like it hits the body on one side, and then leaves a small hole, and at the other side where it goes out, a major part of the skin and bone structure and so on. This looks like a crater. This was something else, but it was not. It was not normal ammunition. It was like how it's called. That's the product name. It's like the ammunition is split into small pieces, some small fragments inside the body, so we can go in different parts and moves around and makes major damage. It can damage actually more different organs within the body. So of course this was lethal, and many were killed by this form of ammunition. And there was an English surgeon with some war experience. I think his name was Colin Poole. He was actually working at the nearest hospital receiving these youngsters with these form of bullet wounds. So they could not find any bullet, and they were like blurred X-ray photos, and making it hard to decide what to look for, what to remove, and how to start the healing process. So he spoke to the Associated Press, and that this was sort of some very special sort of ammunition, and then it was rebroadcasted within the Norwegian press. This information came out, after that it was like this Poole, he later regretted having said what he said in public, as if he was has some English in the statement saying that I didn't know it was a black ops, so then never mind and so on. But actually his as a professional surgeon, he knew what he had seen, what he had dealt with trying to save the lives of these youngsters. So he later repeated in like small forums what he had seen, and this information was completely left out of the abduction reports of the victims, and also it was left out of the trial statements, because since there was a trial, a guy had been accused of murder all these people, each victim, their way of dying was described. He did not state anything about the format of the ammunition that had killed them. It only said he was the so-and-so person, so on that age, where killed either by the pistol or by the gun, which is a completely awkward and non-jurisdictional way of describing what actually caused, because one has to start with the victim, see what caused the death, and that is some sort of ammunition, and then describe the ammunition. And just to have completed the story about Colin Poole, he like some a couple of years after the terror happened in January, maybe 2014, he was skiing in the Alps, and when he had gone off this ski lift and was on top of some mountain, some ski hill there, he just fell dead on the spot. As if he had been hit by some sort of Oregon who can easily provoke heart attacks and so on.
So I know that the official number is now 69 people killed on the island, but yeah. For quite a while it was 84.
That is completely scandalous. I cannot comprehend why it has not been made as a major scandal in Norway, because the press said for the first 3 days after this awkward terror happened that there were 86 people murdered at the island. While in reality, the real number was 68, and one more died, and then it became 69. So that they said there had been 86 dead, but they had not been able to count 86 dead because they were only 68. So this is so completely against all basic principles, including respect of those who are victims. If they were not able to count each dead person as each dead person, and then make a summary of how many, add them together, how many was it in total. So some person, I think it was Reinhard Lukan Kilde, who brave Finnish whistleblower woman, doctor who actually died earlier this year, who said that this is some sort of symbolics. They started with 86, and then they just... as if they're knowing all the time that the real number was 68, and then they just changed the number, the order of the numbers from 86 to 68. So it is completely scandalous that this could happen, how it could happen, and as far as I know, not even a single journalist has tried to look into this, and this very ugly scandal part of it to find out how this was actually possible.
I know that it's said that the laptop where the number of people on the island were registered fell into the water, and because of that they didn't know how many was there and so on, but still that doesn't really explain how you can count 86 dead bodies when there's only 68. So it's an absolute they say that they put blankets on and that's how they counted them, but then there were not blankets enough for them, so they managed to count the same body twice and so on. But we're talking several days after this whole thing, and they were still holding on to that number. I think absolutely scandalous. But at the same time also, am I correct when there was two victims that was their parents and family were told that they drowned, but then when they received the body, they found the bodies had bullet holes. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were... false causes of death reported to the parents of the victims, and there were is it called abduction reports? The abduction reports were like
the autopsy report. The autopsy report.
Of course, all autopsy reports were kept secret, so not even the parents of the victims were allowed to see the autopsy reports of their children. And apart from that, there was a person, I think it was a doctor, or maybe not, named Tarjei Rygnestad, I think it was. He was a sort of leader of this autopsy team, and he died some years ago, for the same reason, some sudden, very unexpected death. So, as if that was some sort of signal to for those who had inside information about the autopsy reports, like those who had written them, to just keep silent and not distribute information they know about the faking or whatever manipulation there was had been of the autopsy reports.
Do you know, Hans, One of the things I reacted strongly when I've seen like interviews with family members and other youngsters who were on the island, it's like there's very little emotion. I don't know if that's only my interpretation, but it's very strange. I would think that parents of a dead child and with these scandals, they would just stand out and scream right out and just like. So, what is your experience when it comes to that?
It's like some of these survivors, they might be in cold and clear after they had survived and telling actually what happened. It's like some sort of survival mode. So that might be like natural in that regard. But apart from that, there are very many like heavy suffering parents in particular and others who were close to the victims, and why have they not made an outcry themselves saying that this should not have happened? I cannot accept it. This is a scandal. The Prime Minister, the government has to leave, and this island should never be anything else than a symbolic cemetery, whatever like this. And these reactions have been like, as you have observed, quite absent, which is nearly impossible in many other cultures than the Norwegian culture. So what can be said is that the press, they focus much more on these emotional issues, the Labour Party, it was their youth camp, they like focused on these on the grief part of it, not on the or government or scandalous omission in their routines, whatever it was, and as if they tried to take some political advantage of which of this episode a few months before the elections, since the Labour Party had a boost in the poll ratings shortly after the tragedy. So I have some vague observations analysis about this whole thing, but it's too complex. I cannot mention anything about it there, but it's like I share your observation, and I'm a bit like baffled or just questioning why was there not more outcry?
Mm. Listen, Hans, how do you say, what do you say, let's take a song, get a glass of water or something like that, and be back in a few minutes? Sounds like a good idea?
Yeah, that'd be fine, yeah.
Great.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Out of the Bag. This is Ole Damgaard standing in for Sean McGuire tonight. And my special guest tonight is Hans Christian Garder, a very skilled Norwegian journalist who is one of the very, very few in Norway that has looked in with a critical eye on the mass shooting on Utøya on the 22nd of July 2011. Some 29 people were brutally slaughtered on that island, as well as an explosion in central Oslo took place with all of it. Very, very odd. The circumstances around the whole thing is very, very strange. Listen, Hans, I would like to ask you about the people surrounding this event. There are some key players that are also very high up in the elite, global elite. I'm talking about the former Prime Minister, Gro Harlem Brundtland, who was... she is one of the architects behind Agenda 21, but also the Prime Minister at that time, Jens Stoltenberg, who is also a Bilderberger, and these two people were very central to this event. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
I must just say that in a way, I don't know. It's like Gro Harlem Brundtland, the previous Prime Minister and Bilderberger and so on. She was on the island on the same day of the shooting. So she, in a way, took the ferry back maybe 2 or 3 hours before the shooting started. So she has then met many of these young people and maybe felt sympathy for them after learning that they left the Earth at a young age. So regarding the Prime Minister then, Jens Stoltenberg, the present Norwegian, the present NATO General Secretary. He's a Bilderberger. His father is the Bilderberger. It's like some, they are some sort of Norwegian Illuminati family, Stoltenberg. And so the major issue is, did he know anything beforehand? Did he have any information beforehand that the Black Ops event actually should take place? Because if this was a Gladio operation, which so Gladio is like terror committed in the NATO countries against normal NATO citizens, committed by NATO units and professional intelligence units. This has happened in Italy, Italy, in Belgium, Gladio operations. In these events, it's this like some sort of major key politician gets the beforehand notice that NATO is going to do some massacres on their own helpless people, population, and they then give they accept it. So that to avoid a shootout between, say, the Delta SWAT team and the Black Ops SWAT team, because if they had started shooting at each other, like on the Utøya Island, maybe there were 8 dead of them after, and some would have to come in and identify them, then they would see that, oh, there were more than one shooter, and so on. So one has then to just realize this smells long way from the Gladio operation, and all this slow motion or stand down omissions within the police department, in particular, and within the Delta forces, the stupid rubber boat and the elite police shooters with the helicopters who were not allowed to take off, and all these things to happen. One would say, who gave the stand-down order if this was a Gladio operation? And as things seem, so, because it has to come at some level within the command structure. So that is, I can just let this be open now. But I spoke to a Mossad officer. We were in Italy and spent some time with some friends from the Illuminati, from Mossad, so. And I spoke to the Mossad officer. We just discussing, like, open mind this 22nd of July thing. And he said that if this was an attack on Israeli youths, they would have used helicopters and sharpshooters, and 5 minutes being there and 3 minutes shooting, pang, 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 end of the game. Count the dead hitmen and count the number of victims, their own young victims, hoping that the number would be as few as possible, hopefully zero. This is how this would have been done if this had been on Israeli territory. So why would the Norwegians not use the police helicopter the only time? It would have been really necessary to, let's say, if the shooting had been stopped at 6 o'clock, there would have been like maybe 29 or 30, 31 dead victims, which means maybe more than 30 people who are not dead would be still among us. Mm. This is a major test of the efficiency and value of the way of operation that was chosen. So why would the police helicopter give the stand-down order? Because it was a Gladio Black Ops. And who gave the order? Who gave the stand-down order? That is an important question which should be investigated to the end, not least by some of those who were close to the victims. So why has this not happened in Norway? I just ask the question.
Yeah, very important question. Listen, Hans, there is a small little ferry ferry boat involved in this whole thing. It's a small ferry called MS Torbjörn, and it's the connection between the mainland and the island. It can only take one vehicle and a few passengers, I think. But this ferry, it was on the island. It took over. It brought the assassin over there, dressed in a police uniform with a big heavy bag that people helped him carry on, and dropped him off the island. Then within a few minutes, he just started, with no apparent reason, he just pulled out his guns and started shooting people there. But what happened with the ferry, because that would have been a perfect vessel for the police to come get over to the island, because this was even armored on the sides, more or less, so the police or the SWAT teams or the special ops could have easily come to the island with this vessel. But what happened with that?
This vessel, if there were no cars on board, it could actually take 50 people. And it was earlier marine vehicle, so it was heavily plated. People could lie on the floor, and if some shooters fired from the island and hit the ferry, they would not get hurt because they had protection from the iron in the ferry. So what happened to the ferry was that the leader of the Norwegian youth party, who was at the camp, Eskil Pedersen, very quickly after the shooting started, he just dropped all his responsibilities as a leader, which should also include some sort of safety or at least information, whatever. A role that should implicate in a serious event, and he went to the ferry, and those who were there could get on board, and he did not wait, did not try to fill the ferry with like save as many as possible, and then he like sort of commanded the captain to let the ferry leave the island, and the captain, I think he was in some sort of shock, because I think it was his wife who had been shot, killed on the island, and I think he was maybe aware of that, so he was like in a traumatized position, so he just like took the orders from this young Labour Party youngsters leader, and then what was for me the most serious action of this Eskil Pedersen was that when the ferry was in the water, and it had heavy protection, so then it should have been used to pick up swimming youngsters from the cold water with too many clothes, maybe not good swimmers, but not even that did actually happen. So this Labour Party youngster leader, he sabotaged all sorts of efforts from the others on board the ferry to persuade him to start stopping the ferry and start going to where the people were swimming and to help them and to save their lives. So the ferry was just bum 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 and drove into the land where it somehow was stuck, and then it did not take part neither in any rescue mission nor in any transport mission for these anti-terror police units. So
as far as I know, they didn't go straight across to where the normal place for the ferry was. They went in a totally different direction and just rammed it up on the rocks, so that
they went far away, as if to make the ferry be of no use. So, from a black ops planning point of view, these dark side planners, their evil actions, are thinking, what are the weak spots? What about the ferry? Oh, we should have someone take care of the ferry. So how did they manage to get this guy to carry the ferry and indirectly risk the lives of many of his friends and those he was the leader for? That is a major question. And he has actually been anmelde. What is it? Anmelde. Anmelde.
They made an official complaint about.
No, so this is the jurisdiction talk as anmelde. To he has been there's been a charge. People have a.
Yeah.
Because he has broken the law. Because in Norway we have a strong ship tradition, and within the ship tradition, it's a duty to help others who are in need. And if you don't do that, you don't act as a human or as a Norwegian or as some person with responsibility. Then you have broken the law. So he was he has been unmelt for breaking the law, not helping his fellow youngsters. And that charge has not been made against him, although the evidence are very clear. So then you have also, there are some weak points in this Norwegian jurisdiction system, who are like collaborating with those who sabotaged and may put the lives of men in grave danger that day.
Mm. But it's there's so many strange things about this, Eskil Pedersen, I think. When you look at Jens Stoltenberg, he was the he had exactly that position in the Labour Youth Party earlier on, and then instead of being looked upon as a traitor and a coward, he's almost lifted in the ceremonies afterwards. He's very central next to the Prime Minister. He's hugged by him. The Prime Minister says, when the Prime Minister gives his big speech in the church, he says, "Your Majesty, Eskil Pedersen, and the rest of you." It's like he's held in a very special position. Have you got any explanation for that?
This always has some sort of ritualistic smell of it, but I'm just an observer, so I don't have all the answers. But it must be said that from the people and from many in Norway, has been a very strong resentment against his covert actions and the way he would just went away to save his own ass. But for me, it might be some major survival instinct in whoever person is the crisis afterwards. But for me, it was like when he was in the water with the boat. He was safe. He could just lie down on the floor. Mm. Should have made the boat be used to save those swimmers. That did not happen at all. So it must be said that those who have criticized him in public, so some sort of strong powers have turned against them. And even still now, the press are using him as some sort of authority on the Utøya incident. It's completely... so it's half insane. It's completely below any decent standard. And he was actually re-elected as the chairman of the Norwegian Labour Union Youngsters Group and so on. So it's very, very ugly, this thing. And now he's actually out of it. But so if you ask me for explanations, it's like all other people, camping tourists, they did not know anything on anybody on the island. They had no protection, no gear, no armor on their boats. They had no bulletproof vest. They had nothing. They just dropped what they had. And many even went as far as to the island and took people on board on the island while the shooting was still going on. So he was the only one who did not have a human reaction. He was acting completely... from an ordinary point of view, incomprehensible. So I assume he was under mind control.
Speaking of mind control, we have a question here from the chat room. Patrick Nee is asking, when it comes to Anders Behring Breivik, the accused assassin here, do you think he was under mind control?
It's like, so I have to act as some sort of just, what to say, as a careful investigator. It's like, what do we know about him? we know about him that he was under he was at the island when the shooting stopped. It's not for sure that he shot to kill people. It's not for sure, but maybe he did. And but actually, I was in the court once during the trial, and then I did not like see him in person. But what was even better was that in the courtroom, a large courtroom.